Hey there, EdTech enthusiast. Welcome back to EdUp EdTech. I'm Nadia, your tech savvy host, and I'm stoked to have you join us for another thrilling episode where we unravel the wonders of educational technology. In this fast-paced digital age, the way we learn and teach is evolving at lightning speed. And guess what? We're here to be your compass through this ever-changing landscape. Today, we're diving headfirst into the realm of immersive learning experiences and cutting-edge innovations. Get ready for a roller coaster ride of insights as we chat with a true pioneer in the field. So fasten your seatbelts, hit play, and let's explore the future of education together. I'm Nadia, and this is EdUp EdTech.
Hi, we're iSpring, an international team of e-learning enthusiasts who help more than 60,000 clients across the globe succeed with better online learning. Our two flagship solutions are iSpring Suite and iSpring Learn LMS. iSpring Suite is an intuitive all-in-one authoring tool for creating engaging e-learning content. And iSpring Learn is an innovative online training platform for onboarding, upskilling, and certifying your teams. We also provide tons of free resources for aspiring and experienced e-learning professionals, conduct weekly webinars with top industry experts, and organize annual e-learning conferences, challenges, and championships. We'd be happy to get to know you and pick a solution that fits your needs best. Go to www.ispringsolutions.com to learn more about us, download our resources, and connect.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another fantastic episode of EdUp EdTech. My name is Holly Owens.
And my name is Nadia Johnson, and we're your hosts.
And we're super pumped for an extra special episode for you today. We have an EdTech recruiter with us, so you're going to want to hear all the wonderful questions we ask and all the advice that he gives. So we have Spencer Sharp. He is a talent specialist at Field Pros, Inc. Spencer, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thanks. Yeah, thank you guys for having me. You know, I think it's long overdue. You know, I've been messaging Nadia a little bit here and there, and seen some awesome stuff on LinkedIn, so really excited to join the show and just chat a little bit today around this recruiting world inside of EdTech.
Well, we're excited too, because we definitely want to know more about this recruiting world, and we get questions in our LinkedIn messages all the time about the EdTech world and how do you get a role in EdTech and lots of transitioning teachers. But yeah, Before we jump into all things recruiting, we want to know a little bit more about you, Spencer. Tell us about your background. How'd you get here into EdTech recruiting? Give us all the details.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I always kind of start out saying, like, if you would have told me I would be where I am today, you know, probably 5 years ago, I probably would have laughed at you. I would have been like, there's just no possible way. That's where I was going to end up. So, you know, right out of college, I took on an opportunity at a school as a teacher teaching STEM, did one of the first STEM programs in Indiana. Really cool opportunity to kind of build something from the ground up. Started my own podcast and company. I'm doing like professional development, STEM curriculum, all that stuff. My wife at the time, or my wife now, you know, at that time though, was pregnant with our first child and was just like, man, you know, this is really busy. You know, I did the farming with my family, I was doing the teaching, and, you know, Sharp the Builder was what the company was called. And so I entered into EdTech. I broke out of the classroom, did sales for EdTech, and then got recruited by a recruiter to recruit, which is a very complex sentence. But he said, hey, you know, I think you'd be pretty good at this, you know, the recruiting thing, and would you want to come do it? And at that time, I didn't know much about it, you know, and kind of the rest is history. You know, it's been an awesome career thus far and something I'm looking forward to staying in for a really long time.
Awesome. So how long have you been recruiting? I'm just curious.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going on about 2 years now here at Field Pros. You know, started as kind of someone that just did recruiting just myself. Now I'm kind of building out my own team just because we're busy enough. As you guys have seen, the EdTech industry has blown up. It's crazy. Yeah. And it's kind of niched down to a certain point where, you know, we only do EdTech recruiting at Field Pros. You know, most of us are former teachers or worked in EdTech, so we kind of know this space and are super passionate about it.
That's awesome. Yeah, because getting into EdTech now is a completely different ballgame than it was a few, Like when I moved into EdTech in 2021, and it's completely like getting a job in EdTech then was completely different than it is now. But can you kind of share some key qualities or skills you prioritize when recruiting candidates? So thinking about candidates moving into the EdTech realm, what are some key qualities and skills that you are looking for in candidates?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think it really depends overall, maybe on the company and the structure and the responsibilities of the person. But I really think, you can kind of, almost create a little, subset of things that all those people need in ed tech. And so I think number one, it's the ability, and you guys being former teachers a little bit, know kind of this world, you got to be able to pivot, which is, most teachers have to do all the time and inside of education, because
Right.
most of these companies that are willing to take on, former educators usually want someone that understands their space and are okay with doing many things. Maybe they're doing a little bit of sales, a little bit of implementation, a little bit of customer success. So I think that's the first big one. Number two, I think it's the confidence to say, hey, I've been a teacher. I understand that I did really well at this, but I know I can do this job. And I've actually kind of done it when I was a teacher, but here's what it looked like. It just looked different. Someone that can make that transition in conversations when they're having interviews is someone who's going to stick somewhere. It's just that simple. And then I think the third thing that we normally kind of see is what I would call some of these soft skills. So like when I was teaching, I developed a lot of soft skills of, creating my own podcast, doing my own marketing, going out and kind of selling myself to different districts on doing PDs. And so I think it was little things like that that kind of set me apart from the market, from everyone else that might have been there. So I think that those are kind of the three that I would say overall are the qualities I'm really looking at, and I think companies really desire.
I love that. Would you say that most of the edtech companies are looking for former educators? Because I feel like I've found that a little bit, but especially those that are like centered around K-12 education.
Yeah, the short answer is yes.
And
But I
then.
think it's a certain subset of companies. You're going to have your companies that, I'm, working with, and they're a client of mine. They might say, hey, well, I want a former teacher, but I want them to have 2 or 3 years experience. And that might be a mid to senior level role, but a lot of what I would call kind of those, maybe entry level or even some mid, they're willing to take on someone that's maybe leaving the classroom that has done something really dynamic.
Yeah.
Especially if it's really niche down. Like I have a company that deals with STEM. Well, they were okay with, interviewing a lot of STEM coordinators rather than maybe some people that had experience at a similar company, because they were like, they just get it. They've been in the class more recently, things have changed. So I
Right.
think, the kind of short answer is yes, but it kind of is complicated in the sense that it depends on the company's size and responsibilities.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense too. And I feel like you're saying, some of those soft skills, what those were really important. And amongst, like, we get asked a lot about instructional design roles, but I feel like ed tech and instructional design really have a lot of overlap when it comes to certain situations, depending on what you do in the ed tech industry. So like translating what lesson planning is or curriculum planning is to like project management. I mean, you're not gonna come in lesson planning and planning a unit and then know how to project manage, say, in the corporate space, but it's gonna give you a good jumping off point.
Yeah, definitely. And I think something you said too that I really try to like get people to think really outside the box. Everyone wants to do instructional design. Like it seems like everybody, you know what I mean? And that's and funny enough, that's what I wanted. I got my master's in that, and that was kind of my plan. And then I
Oh,
kind of
fancy.
And then I realized, even after my master's and when I worked for my first ed tech company before I was at Field Pros, I'm like, I actually kind of did quite a bit of sales, and I kind of have that personality. And someone might be kind of thinking the same thing. So I think it's good to, get your name out there, talk to people on LinkedIn that are doing, marketing, customer success, project management. Maybe they're doing, back end statistical type of work for companies, and they're doing something maybe that's just a little bit odd that you could fit into. So I think it's good to maybe think outside of the box of just your norm. One role that a teacher can do, because teachers have done or do, still do so much in their roles. Like I remember when I was in the classroom, I'm like, I feel like I've never worked this hard in my life for everything I got to do. And I got to
Yeah.
wear many hats. And so I think those many hats translate to many different opportunities in the ed tech world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like marketing is a huge piece. It's weird. Mm. You know, it's a huge piece of what we do as instructional designers. We're marketing ourselves, our products and stuff, and especially doing a podcast. You turn into a marketer really fast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're a salesperson and a marketer for sure.
I mean, consider that when you're trying to sell yourself for a job, you kind of have to learn how to sell something, how to, you know, I kind of tapped into my marketing era when I was looking for a job, because I kind of had to build my own brand, like rebrand who I was and what I had to offer and position my skills in a different way. Because transferable skills, we all have them, but they're used in different contexts. So you have to be able to translate.
Right. Yeah. And I even think too, to kind of what you're saying, and this is something I tell people all the time, you know, if you're looking to kind of, you know, leave the classroom, even if you're in ed tech and you're in one position, you're wanting to go to another position, it's about marketing yourself and marketing yourself differently. Like even when I was leaving the classroom, the way I got so many interviews, but you know, given like Nadia said, it was a different time, you know, so I was able to get a lot of interviews. It's a little bit tougher now. I like sent out a bunch of like little videos to different leaders, just like, hey, my name's Spencer. Kind of here's my background. Here's what I've done. And here's why I know I would be a good fit. You know, I'd love to talk. And so many people responded like, oh, this is so much different than getting a resume, looking at the resume and just being like, oh, there's Spencer, you know, it kind of puts your name to the top. So I think it's marketing yourself differently than the rest of the market to make yourself appear different. Even when I'm working with candidates, with clients, it's like, hey, how can we make yourself appear differently? What kind of questions can we ask in interviews or different fun things we can do? So at the end of the day, you know, there's many people that could do one job that's out there, right? You know, in a given kind of landscape, but the person they're going to choose is the person that maybe is going to set themselves apart and they want to work with the most.
Absolutely.
Yep. That's one of the things I told people is they're like, how do I stand out? It's like, record a video about yourself.
Yep.
Record a video and talk about yourself. I need to do that. I tell other people to do it, but I don't take my own advice.
I know.
Maybe I should be a recruiter. So like when it comes to some of like the latest trends and like things that are happening in the landscape of ed tech, like any advancements and stuff, I know we're getting a lot of AI pushed at us recently. Like, how do you stay informed about what's happening, and how does this inform like your recruitment strategies and what you do when you're looking for people to fill these types of roles?
Yeah, I think we, you know, one of the things we do different at Field Pros, you know, being, I mean, there's not a lot of specific just ed tech recruiting firms. Usually this is like a branch of a, you know, a large company. So we really try to keep our finger on the pulse of things by just chatting with different leaders, say, hey, what are you guys doing and why is it different for this space? You know, and I think all that information we're getting, to your point, you know, helps us say, okay, these are the kind of companies we want to work with. You know, we want to work with the best of the best. And we want to work with the companies that are, you know, cutting edge, you know, like AI, for example. There's a lot of companies that are going to be just your strictly AI companies, but then there's going to be your companies that have maybe a little AI component, you know, and what's the best way to approach that? What is funding going to look like for it? What makes it more sound? What are some troubles people are having or things they're running into? So it's kind of looking at it from a lens of, you know, kind of a recruiter, if you will, or just a third party to say like, okay, what's great about it? What needs improved? And how do we know this is going to be a long, sustainable fit? You know, because I talk to people all the time that, you know, 3 years ago they were at a company and it was great. You know, that company was super hot. You know, maybe that product died down because someone came to the market, or maybe they got acquired and, you know, they're doing riffs and other things of that nature. And so I think, you know, that's a big part of it, is just kind of keeping our fingers on the pulse and keeping people informed, you know, as best we can, to so that they make the best decisions. You know, some of the most stressful things in your life are moving, a job change, or, you know, growing a family, they say, you know. And so I take it pretty serious as a recruiter to say like, hey, you know, I want to make sure things are a good fit and they make sense for people. And so, you know, gathering that knowledge really helps that, I think.
Yeah, I posted something maybe a little jaded on LinkedIn the other day about a dream job, like how dream and job might not go in the same sentence. I feel like we try to perpetuate this fantasy of and romanticize having a job in our, especially in our capitalistic culture. And I think one of the things, like what you're saying, is really resonating with me. Like the reality of the situation is we're doing other things outside in life besides just having a job. So just that idea of the dream role, or just a role that where you feel like you can advance yourself or you can develop your skills. Like I find that in roles where I'm really passionate about it, I become super dedicated to that role. But in other times, like I just get really, you know, if I don't love it, I get apathetic, I get, you know, mm-hmm. I get lazy or unmotivated. So like having that conversation with yourself, and I feel like that's where a recruiter really, the support of a recruiter is really mm-hmm. necessary. I'm sure you become a therapist at certain points too with people when you're trying to find these roles, and they really turn to you to be like, you know, you're the person, like you're like the agent for the sports, like the athlete trying to find the role or the contract that they're going to get. They're going to land to, you know, get whatever bonus and make millions of dollars.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's very smart to look at it from that lens too, of like, hey, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you want something you're passionate about, but you know, a job is a job, right? And you want to be passionate and you want to be able to pour your heart into it, but not so much that it takes up just your whole self, you know, and a lot of people do that. I'm guilty of doing it, kind of like you know, you even said, but yeah, I become a therapist in some different ways, but you know, sometimes I just like to be the voice of reason to tell people like, hey, here's what I'm hearing about, you know, what is going on with this kind of company inside of EdTech. You know, I would love, you know, just to tell you more, connect you with people, you know, and a lot of times mm-hmm. with a big network, like any recruiter has, I'm able just to connect people with anyone so they can make a sound decision. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I want to do what's right by people. You know, that's kind of our motto here at Field Pros is, you know, always do the right thing. And so we do that by, you know, lending that knowledge and, you know, being the kind of that shoulder to talk to for people too. So yeah, it's different in that sense. When I first brought this on, I didn't think I would be that as much, but I've grown to really like it, because then you grow really close with people and they become, you know, more like, you know, friends and family than anything, you know, with people you work with, which I think is cool.
Yeah. I love that aspect of it too. Yeah.
I also feel like there's so much going on LinkedIn now, especially in this job market. It is something serious. And you have like job seekers kind of having this like feeling toward recruiters, and recruiters trying to defend themselves and explain like the process is not as easy as you think it is. So what challenges do you commonly encounter when recruiting for EdTech positions? Because I'm sure there's kind of many out there, and how do you kind of address those? Because I think a lot of job seekers don't really think about the whole process. The whole recruiting process. Sometimes we just get so caught up in like wanting to move through the process that we forget that there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to recruiting for positions.
Yeah. And so I love that question, because, you know, a lot of people don't ask me that, you know, you just sometimes, like you said, get some of the conversations going on LinkedIn. But you know, unfortunately there's just things when you're, you know, a third party recruiter that are out of your hands, right? You know, I've told people this, you know, the story of like, I remember one of the first companies I worked with when I came on 2 years ago, I thought this candidate was like the perfect fit. You know, I put them forth and, you know, we usually present, you know, two or three people. Well, you know, they went silent on the one person that I really liked, but then moved other people forward, you know, didn't give me feedback. And then eventually was like, okay, we're not moving forward with them. And, you know, kind of strung that person out, you know, in a way. And so I think, you know, the tough part of what we do, to kind of put it simply, you know, it's like you're marrying two people that maybe just met, you know, and really making sure they hit it off though anyways, you know, it's
it's like setting up blind dates.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah. And I always kind of joke, you know, because like when I first started doing this, my wife, she kind of didn't understand exactly. And I'm like, it's kind of like, you know, these different shows she really likes, you know, like Love is Blind. Yeah. All these shows. I don't like those as much she does, but I'm like, that's kind of what we do as recruiters. We're trying to make that work. And sometimes it isn't going to work for one party and not the other. So the tough part is, you know, kind of, you know, balancing that relationship all the way up to the end, you know, and hopefully obviously there's an offer, but that whole process of, you know, bringing someone on, telling them about the interview process, letting them know what that looks like, you know, all that kind of stuff is, you know, very tough in a way that people don't understand. Because you don't normally see that, you know, from someone that doesn't have a recruiter, you know, they might just have someone that sends a general email, whereas I'm calling someone up like, hey, you know, they're going to pass on you, you know, and here's kind of why, but, you know, I'd love to stay in contact because I think you're a great candidate. And I think, you know, you're going to be the right fit at the right company. So I think it's, you know, kind of having those relationships and trying to kind of bring two parties to the end that yeah. is a lot tougher than it sounds, you know, as you're saying it out loud. Like there's been times where I've had a company and a candidate, you know, really trying to figure out what the final step's going to look like in signing. And it takes sometimes, you know, 2 or 3 weeks when you feel like that should take, you know, a week maybe, you know? So I think it's that kind of realization maybe that people don't realize on LinkedIn that I've kind of noticed. Yeah. But from the other side of things too, I always tell people, you know, I get where candidates are coming from. There's, you know, companies sometimes that don't give good feedback, you know, and that's obviously
or
not
any at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Or any at all.
We're,
and
we're not going to give you any feedback.
Yeah.
They're just going to send a decline.
Yeah. The general like email that, you know, 20 people got. Right. And so I think that's tough. You know, and I've had companies where, you know, you really reach out and you say like, hey, we really need feedback, you know, and they might not give you really sound feedback, you know, and I tell people at the end of the day, sometimes I think that's because maybe they realize you were a really good fit, but maybe they just had someone farther along, you know, timing is everything too. So I think it's, you know, a little bit of all that kind of stuff that we see as recruiters kind of in a process.
Yeah. One of the things I was thinking about when you were saying that is the rejection. Like, oh, yeah. It's just, it seems so impersonal these days. It seems like, and I'll say that, like, I've done some, you know, applying recently, just seeing what's out there and kind of, cause we talk to jobs a lot. So I want to see how things go. If what I'm saying is actually true, I want to test my experiment. But honestly, it's just, it feels like they're just putting in your name and just like, we reject you. And Nadia and myself, we're applying the roles. I have like almost 20 years of experience in instructional design. And I'm getting a no thank you, thanks, but no thanks email.
Right. Yeah. And that's so like, for me, you know, I think that's one thing that it's not fun for companies to do. So some companies view it as like, we'll just won't do it, you know? And I like this week I had to call 2 or 3 people for an opportunity, for a VP of sales, and they weren't moving them forward. And the kind of feedback was they just didn't have as much experience as everyone else, you know, which is an unfortunate conversation. Cause I'm like, it's nothing you can help, you know? And then we kind of had the discussion of what was in the market, you know, some other people I could connect them with. And so I think, you know, when people use someone like Field Pros, the nice part is, you know, I can call someone up and say, hey, you know, it's unfortunate, but I want to be real with you. You know, I mm-hmm. hate when you're not able to get feedback. I'd rather you get some feedback, you know, even if the feedback we have right now is not the best feedback, we can always try to get more too, right? Like even a candidate last week, she had experience with core and they wanted more supplemental. And I was like, you know, it's unfortunate because that's not great feedback. But at least we're getting a little bit, I'll dig more and we're going to figure out, you know, what's the next step for you.
I love yeah. that. And I think where I was going with that on the other side of that is how can companies do better with that? So from mm-hmm. a recruiting perspective, and I understand they get hundreds and thousands of applicants, all that stuff, but
yeah. huh? I said, like I think that's truly what it is. Like a lot of them are doing this on their own. Like a lot of them are not partnering with recruiters. So mm-hmm. I feel like they're trying to respond to hundreds and thousands of applications and just don't have the capacity.
Mm-hmm. So one thing they could do is sign up to work with you. That's right. Number one. Number two is like, what are number two and three? Like, what can they do to do this better and treat us like humans? Like we're not just, you know, coming in here on an assembly line or we're just minions and right. things like that. A lot of people, a lot of LinkedIn posts about getting rejection, yeah. you know?
Right. I think having a sound process, you know, a lot of companies, even if, you know, maybe they don't use our services, they'll like meet with me just to kind of figure out like, you know, what things should look like for them. And I'm like, man, just having, you know, different processes in place, like, oh, you know, we're going to, let's say they get 50 people that apply and they, you know, interview 5 of them, making sure there's a process for those 5 people from the beginning to the end to if they reject them, why, and giving feedback, not necessarily like your John Doe email of like, hey, sorry, you know, it's having that detail in there to say like, hey, we really enjoyed you, you know, X, Y, and Z, but here's kind of why we think, you know, we're passing at this time. So I think it's having a good process is kind of what we, you know, harp to companies, and especially with the feedback portion of it all. And then I think, you know, third, it's just using the resources you have internally to have someone that has to make those calls or produce those emails that are a little bit less just auto-generated. You know, it doesn't feel good when you spent time interviewing with someone for weeks on end and they've kind of strung you out, and then you get that general email, right? I've been there. I remember when I was first getting into ed tech, I spent, you know, a couple of weeks with a company just to kind of get a very general email, and that stung. It really did. And then there was another company I interviewed with where it was very personalized. I said, oh, you know, we really liked you, Spencer. Just didn't love the experience at this time. You know, there's someone stronger in the pipeline. And I emailed them back, said, I get it. You know, that makes 100% sense to me. They said, hey, you know, we would love to stay in contact. And I still talk to that company to this day. You know, and they're actually one of my clients, you know, funny enough. And so it kind of goes full circle if people just do the right thing, I think, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's just a matter of treating people with respect and like humans and valuing their time. I mean, we understand that money's being spent. We understand, you know, like there are things that are happening in the background, but I feel like it also says a lot about the company culture as well and how they treat that situation. So when people ask me for, you're like, well, I got this rejection, or I got this, or this is happening in the stages of the interview. Nadia, tell me to shut up because I'm loving this episode. And you brought Spencer on. So, but yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. It really disappoints me when I hear about some people's experiences, and people can do better. They can do
and
better.
And honestly, too, one thing I tell people, just because like ed tech is, I always kind of word it funny, like it's small, but it's big, right? There's, you know, a lot of maybe companies, but everyone kind of knows one another. It's not a good look if, you know, you don't have a great process. Like I've been, you know, I remember I got a call a couple months from someone. They're like, hey, I declined this job from so-and-so. You know, they had 22 interviews. I'm like, what? 22, that's way too many. Like they should have a defined process of 3 to 5 is what we recommend.
Was it like 22 rounds?
One person?
Yes, one person. And so, I mean, there's times where, you know, there's just things like that you hear and you're like, that's just not going to be a good look. You know, and it's the same thing with, you know, other stuff. And so I think it's having those processes says a lot about the whole company culture, right? You know, and people constantly ask me like, oh, you know, what is the company culture like here versus here? I was like, if you know, you have conversations, you can usually tell pretty quickly, like even
absolutely
right away, like, oh, this is a great place to be. Or like, you might come back and say, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe they said that, or I can't believe this process looks like this for them, or I can't believe they're doing this, you know? And, you know, kind of on the other end of that, it's like, you know, that might work for somebody and that might be great for somebody, but it ain't for me, right? And so that's the kind of the nice part about the pond that we all live in here with ed tech. It's kind of dynamic in the fact that there's so many different ways you can approach it and so many different companies.
Yeah. I think companies have, especially, they have to be really careful with that, because I've had some really interesting experiences with interviews and feedback and all of that. And now those companies I will never apply to again. I will never want to do any type of business with. So, and I think that's kind of how a lot of job seekers feel right now. Like they're at the point of like, you revealed yourself, you revealed how you would operate, and I actually don't want to work for you now because of this experience I've had. So I think that is like probably the best advice, is have a real process. Cause I think sometimes a lot of companies don't, and they're just kind of like winging it. Cause I've been there before, especially with an ed tech startup.
Yeah. And having that process, and that's why, you know, anytime people meet with me, they're like, well, what do you see from some of your clients? I was like, you know, I can share that interview process with you. Like, here's what they do, and here's what's worked for them, and here's what helped them grow from, you know, a very small team to a very large team, you know? And I think people don't use each other enough in ed tech, and ed tech is some of the nicest people ever, because the majority of them are former teachers. And so they're always willing to help one another. So it's like, use one another to create a really good process that's going to leave your hired candidates really happy, but more importantly, the people you passed on happy as well, to be like, man, you know, if something did open up there, I would still want to go there. Right. Like I work with a couple of companies that are like that. Like people that turn away, they turn away. They're like, hey, if anything ever comes back up there, let me know, because I loved all the conversations. I loved the people and how they approached this whole process. So I think that says a lot if you have that in place.
Absolutely.
I love the companies and their job description. They list what the process is, how many rounds it's going to be. I love that transparency, because it just, it lessens the anxiety. It lessens the expectation and the anticipation of what's going to be happening next. Love companies that do that, along with the salary.
I love that. Give me all the information.
Yes. Which in some states, it's required to list this, the salary. And I think it'll get to the point where, you know, eventually it'll be all states as well. And I think even too, you know, from that salary standpoint of things, I always think it's kind of smart if companies, you know, have someone like us, because, you know, I think it's good just to ask people, you know, what would it take in order for you to make a change, right? Just to see kind of where they're thinking. And like I said, kind of, again, marrying two unlike things to see, like, you know, does your expectations and their expectations match, you know? And I think that's a nice part about having a recruiter, you know, sometimes, and getting those industry averages, because they are ever changing, right? With different jobs we see in the market. You know, that's one thing I get pinged a lot from, you know, teachers that are current or maybe former teachers or people in the market. They're like, hey, am I being underpaid, you know, or am I being overpaid? Like, I have no idea. And, you know, I'm
able- God, if we're overpaid. Teachers are never overpaid.
Well, no, I'm saying like other ed tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Companies, yeah, like, especially startups. Yeah.
I would never say the word overpaid in my entire career, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. I mean, and that's, it's funny, because it's very rare for it to be that way. But I had a conversation with someone a couple of weeks ago where they're like, yeah, here's kind of my base at this company and everything else. And like, I feel overpaid. And I'm like, I've never heard anyone, you know, say that, you know, necessarily. It's very rare. But, you know, a lot of companies, we work with them on that kind of stuff, right? We are telling them like what the industry average looks like, what you need to do to get the kind of talent you want. And I think that's one of the other challenges is, like, you know, some companies, they want that unicorn profile. Well, you know, unicorn profile is going to look very different. You know, it might cost more in this area versus this area, depending on where people live.
Unicorn profile deserves unicorn money, not a range of 5,000, like not a range of 50,000 to 150,000. Yeah. That does not give us any clue as to what you're looking for.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it.
And I would say too, like, it's just people lowball themselves far too often. Worth. They absolutely do. So speaking of unicorns, we get a lot of questions about from people, especially when we do different webinars and stuff, about the technical expertise of the role and what you need to know. What technologies do you need to know, especially in instructional design or ed tech? So how do you, like, evaluate a candidate's potential based on those things? Like, what are you looking for? And amongst that, like, what about that along with, like, the education principles that they bring, you know, into the situation? So, like, technical stuff, and then of course, like, knowing the theories and all the educational stuff that they need to be successful in the role.
Right. That's a great question. And you know, I think it's really just having that intake form where usually I'll gather a resume from them. And I was like, oh, you know, you're certified in, you know, let's say in this scenario for instructional design, oh, you know, you have a certificate with Canva, you know, and you do Canva and you are able to design in there. Tell me what that's looked like in your career. You know, what are some projects you can show me? What are some things you've done? You know, vice versa with anything a company needs, they usually tell us, you know, beforehand. So when I'm working with a client, maybe they're like, hey, you know, our product is, you know, math common core driven. We want someone that understands the math common core space for open territory. So then I'm asking, you know, them about those different kinds of needs. And so basically as a recruiter, I always kind of think of it, I try to think of it simple, and it's probably more in my teacher mind. I'll say, hey, these are kind of the four boxes that are important to you. And I'll review those with the client. And then I'll go back to the candidates and I'll say, hey, how do you match these boxes? You know? And so I think that's kind of what I usually do, is kind of, you know, test how well they do some of those things. You know, just by asking more and more questions. You know, as recruiters, we're good storytellers and we're great at asking questions. So, you know, any question that kind of hits my mind to say, hey, you know, how good are you at using Canva, Photoshop, HubSpot, you know, maybe Slack, you know, if a company's really into that, or something of that nature, Salesforce, you know, because being able to ramp up quickly is very important to most companies.
That's an interesting insight. So to close, I'm sure our audience wants to know, like, kind of what advice do you have for individuals who want to move into the edtech space or advance their career in the edtech space?
Yeah, I get asked that question a lot, and I've answered it probably 10 different ways, funny enough.
It's different every time.
Yeah, I put a new flavor on it because there's a lot of different ways you can approach it. But if I could sum them all up into one, I think, you know, if you're looking to, you know, make a change and you're seeking, you know, maybe some different skills that we talked about, it's just getting your name out there, right? You never know what a conversation is going to entail, you know, whether it be with LinkedIn connections or social media and where it's going to go. I never thought I would necessarily be where I am today and maybe have built up some different skills that, you know, I didn't necessarily learn from my training in college, but learned, you know, myself. So I think it's, you know, just never backing down from something and having the confidence to say, you know, I can do this and I know I can do it really well.
I love that. And you've mentioned LinkedIn more than once, more than twice, more than three times as being out there on LinkedIn world. Mm-hmm. That confidence is key. Like just knowing your skills. And I tell people if they're looking to transition roles, they need to, in their current role, get as much professional development from that current role as possible.
Yes.
So are there ways in which they can take certain courses that the company will pay for? Do they have free LinkedIn learning mm-hmm. courses? Can you go sign up for Udemy or something like that? Get as much professional development as you can internally because you're aware that you're transitioning roles and you can put that information like on your resume that you've done this with said company. And also it looks good too if you end up deciding to stay there that you are showing like you're proactive around, you know, wanting to be professionally developed.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you hit it the nail on the head there, you know, it's doing all that extra stuff. And the, you know, worst case scenario is you have it in your back pocket, you know, and you have it on your resume, get on there, you know, LinkedIn has free courses like crazy, you know, people offer free courses on LinkedIn, just kind of promo for whatever they might do. And kind of getting yourself plugged into that network is just going to allow you to get all that kind of PD, you know, and kind of grow in awesome ways.
There's even awesome webinars out there. So,
yes.
Yeah, there's some pretty awesome webinars that people do for free and dedicate their time. Spencer, we could talk to you for another hour and I want to, but we won't. We won't take, we're going to have to do a follow-up episode.
Yep.
This was amazing. We so appreciate your time. And I know our audience is going to love this episode, especially those looking into going into the ed tech industry. And we're going to have all the information in the show notes about where they can reach you, where companies can reach out with, you know, to work with you so that they can contact you and get in touch, especially looking for a job in the ed tech industry. So thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
Oops.
Hi, we're iSpring, an international team of e-learning enthusiasts who help more than 60,000 clients across the globe succeed with better online learning. Our two flagship solutions are iSpring Suite and iSpring Learn LMS. iSpring Suite is an intuitive, all-in-one authoring tool for creating engaging e-learning content, while iSpring Learn is an innovative online training platform for onboarding, upskilling, and certifying your teams. We'd be happy to get to know you and pick a solution that fits your needs best. Go to www.ispringsolutions.com to learn more about us and connect.
That brings us to the end of another captivating journey through the world of educational technology. If you found today's episode as enlightening as I did, make sure to subscribe and share it with your fellow EdTech enthusiasts. Your support keeps us going and brings more amazing content your way. Remember, the conversation doesn't end here. Connect with us on social media. We love hearing your thoughts, suggestions, and ideas for future episodes. As we sign off, this is Holly, urging you to stay curious, stay inspired, and keep pushing the boundaries of education, technology, and beyond. Until next time, take care and keep learning.